shore.
Yes, it did. It came right across, right down over top of us, right there.
There is the Hurricane Landfall Project truck. It's all set up, strapped down. We're going to turn all the switches on in just a little while. Standing outside of the Chevy Tahoe, we are getting into the eye wall of Hurricane Gene right now. Four came in on shore here along the southeast coast of Florida.
These little bullet cams right here that we will use to record that surge.
It's about 9 o'clock now, central time, which means that if we set them up and turn them on right now, they'd run until about noon tomorrow.
Does thunderstorm activity appear to consolidate around that eye?
That is storm surge from the Atlantic Ocean, the overwash coming in.
You're listening to Stories from the Hurricane Highway, the weekly podcast series that takes an in-depth look back at over two decades of tracking hurricanes, technology, behind-the-scenes stories, and much more. I'm your host, Mark Suddeth. So glad you could join me, and thank you for supporting this exclusive podcast via Patreon. Hello and welcome to another edition of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. So glad you could join me. It is now Wednesday, December 30th, that I am posting this episode, and that means we only have one day left in the year 2020. But, of course, we're not talking about this year. We are talking about 15 years ago. That is the subject of this particular episode as we go back in time 15 years still to the year 2005 and the creation of the unmanned camera box, the very first concept box. That is what the major crux of this episode will be all about. I will be joined by my good friend Paul Bowman in just a little bit. He was instrumental in helping me figure out some of the technical challenges to get the very first unmanned camera box up and running. But before we get to that, let's just go over a little bit of background info, kind of catch you up, get you up to speed on where we are at this point. The year 2005, of course, coming off that very busy 2004 season, the thought, the idea of streaming live became a reality in the Chevy Tahoe, at least using a Sony Handycam, the Sony Vaio laptop, a FireWire cable, and Windows Media Encoder, thanks to Jim Williams and our mutual friend that we had become associated with, Ross, down at suncam.tv, both of them, Jim and Ross in Florida. Jesse and I, with the help of Jason, we all conquered it. We figured it out. We figured out how to do it in the Tahoe, and we could do it anywhere using the Sprint network. And I thought, all right, we got something here for the 2005 season. I think we're going to be able to roll this out in fairly limited capacity. But then the challenge, the competition, so to speak, from my good friend Jeff Flock, who was wanting to create his own live streaming news hurricane information service, if you will. He was wanting to get that off the ground. The website was going to be called hurricanenow.com. I opted to remain separate. Again, it was a very amicable relationship. Competition, as I said in the last episode, can be a healthy thing, and this was certainly that situation. Jeff and a couple of his colleagues were going to tackle doing live updates from time to time during the 05 season. I wanted to be live wall to wall, you know, from a vehicle using the Sprint card that I had. I was going to obtain more through my partnership with Sprint. And so that brings us up to this idea where I thought, all right, we got to be able to figure out a way to really change everything, revolutionize live hurricane coverage. We're going to do a really good job, hopefully streaming live from the vehicle. But what about those situations where we want to have video streaming live? And that's the ultimate goal, right? Live is best. Everybody likes live, especially in a major hurricane where people are evacuating and it just doesn't make sense to be there. And it might be physically impossible to be there. And that would certainly be the case quite a few times over during the 2005 season, as you well know. So what was it going to take? Well, I had the idea that we know we can stream using a laptop and Windows Media Encoder. I didn't think that I could use additional Handycam camcorders and FireWire cables. That just wasn't going to work for a number of reasons. Sony Handycams, even back in 2005, those were not cheap. And you really couldn't have a FireWire cable. That was not going to be a good solid connection. And so I had to look into a different way to do it. And so that was the first piece of the puzzle. All right. Well, actually, it was probably the second piece. We knew we had the laptop and the Windows Media Encoder part solved. But I guess the next part, the problem to solve was what was going to be the webcam, so to speak. What was the source of the camera going to be? Well, after a little bit of research on the internet, and in 05, we didn't have Amazon.com like we do today. We didn't have B&H Photo like we do today. We had Google, certainly. We had Outpost.com and different company websites, and it was fairly easy to search for products that you need. Today, 15 years later, if it exists, you can find it pretty much on eBay or Amazon.com. But back in 2005, it was a little bit more challenging. And as such, just a fairly quick search of security camera, you know, something like that, security/webcam, that helped me out a lot. And because at first I was thinking, well, maybe I could just use a regular webcam, you know, from Logitech or somebody. But it turns out that those are not weatherproof. You know, you cannot take a Logitech webcam, I don't care how long the cable is, and put it out in a hurricane. They're going to get wet. They're going to get wind blasted, sand blasted, maybe even salt spray, whatever. And those are not going to work. So webcams per se, your traditional, you know, you remember Circuit City? They had Circuit City back in 2005. I can't remember if we had Best Buy, but I know I spent some time at Circuit City and probably even Radio Shack looking at different webcams that were in existence. So I finally found, through searching on the internet, a bullet cam, as it's called. It is a security camera that is shaped like a bullet, if you will. It's a very small, like a lipstick cam. It was self-contained inside of a very, very small housing that looked like a little film canister. Remember back when you would develop 35 millimeter film and you could put it in those little film canisters? This thing was small enough, as an example, that you could put it in your mouth. I mean, for real, it was small. But the beauty of it was self-contained, already inside a weatherproof housing. And it was sealed with nitrogen, hermetically sealed. It would not fog up from the inside. There was no way for moisture to get in. The power requirement for it was very low. And it didn't have audio, which was fine. I was not interested necessarily in audio this first go-around. That would come several years later. But it was this really neat bullet cam. It provided 525 lines of television resolution as it is. I think the abbreviation is TVL, TV lines. Full color, 4:3 aspect ratio, and it was an analog input. So it's a security camera. Normally, you would plug it in and you power it up. It had a BNC connection, and you would put it into like an interface where you could switch from camera 1 to camera 2 to camera 3. I mean, these would be put into office buildings or maybe home security, into some kind of a video routing system to switch between the multiple cameras that you might want to have. And as it turns out, this same company made a nighttime version that was black and white that had these little LED sensor things and infrared lighting that would light up an area 50 to 100 feet out in front of it, and it would work in zero visibility with these LEDs kind of lighting up a scene. Not a large area. You're not going to light up a city block or a major intersection or anything like that, but it could see, I don't know, 50 to 100 feet in front of it. At least that's what it said. And so I thought, all right, this is going to work just fine. I'm going to get these cameras. I'll buy one of each, a color daytime camera and a black and white nighttime camera, and I'm going to get a digitizer, some kind of a, because they're BNC, I needed to get from the BNC connection to RCA, and I needed to have a way to get this into the laptop. So that was easy to solve. There was a product out there called Dazzle. Dazzle was a digitizer mainly used to get your home video recordings from a VCR or a old camcorder, whatever, to get it from the video camera through the digitizer, that's the interface, into your laptop or your PC or your Mac or whatever. It was a way to digitize home video. It was called Dazzle. Readily available. I think they were about $60 or $70 each. These cameras, by the way, were, I believe at the time, about $200, $250 a pop. And so I bought a couple of those. I bought this digitizer, the Dazzle. And I settled on just a simple, fairly low-end, probably an AMD processor, if I'm remembering correctly. Maybe a $600 or $700 Dell laptop. That would be the laptop that we would use that would run Windows Media Encoder and a couple of other things, which we will get into, for this idea of a box. So I started assembling the pieces. All right, we got the laptop, we have the camera system, we have the digitizer, but then I had to figure out, well, how in the world am I going to power all of this? Because remember, in the Tahoe, the Sony Vaio, which was a high-end laptop, that's like a $1,500 laptop, and that's a real workhorse. It's doing email, web browsing, it's sending a webcam image, it's doing the Windows Media Encoder stuff for the live video that we're going to start doing there, and it required a pretty healthy power supply, but that problem was easily solved in the Chevy Tahoe because we had an inverter, a 750-watt, two 110 outlets, inverter. And so I had basically unlimited power. As long as the Tahoe and its alternator and the electrical system were doing fine and the Tahoe's engine was running, I would have unlimited power for whatever I needed in the Tahoe. So that's not a problem, but I can't, I'm not bringing a generator with me to power these unmanned cameras. So I was trying to figure out, well, how on earth am I going to power all of this? And that brings me to my good friend, Paul Bowman. So, Paul, I'm trying to remember, it's 15 years at least. I mean, probably more than that. But I told the story at least once, maybe twice already, that I got a text from you during Isabel. That was 2003. You said that you were sitting in a bar or something in Nevada. And remember, I thought that, my brain pictured Bruce Willis and a flight jacket. And
yes,
we were watching CNN, and there we were with Jeff. And it was, and you looked up hurricanetrack.com, and I had a little contact area. And back in 03, it really wasn't a bad idea to put your phone number out there. Today, you would never do that. And you texted my phone.
Directly.
Right. And you were like, hey, just wanted you to know I'm watching you from a bar or something like that. I mean, is that true? That's what I recall.
We were, Trish and I believe we're at the Four Kegs, which is a pretty well-known place in Vegas.
So that is how Paul came to discover HurricaneTrack.com and by default, me. We stayed in touch on a limited basis over the next couple of years. A couple of emails back and forth, probably. A few questions from him about how we were doing our webcam. And because he definitely saw that on HurricaneTrack.com in 2003 and probably saw it a few times in 2004. And he bookmarked HurricaneTrack.com as a weather website favorite of his. Paul was into webcams. He was able to do a live broadcast, or at least a live webcam image from his vehicle as well. And he'll talk about that as we go forward in the interview here soon. But, we stayed in touch on a limited basis. And then in 2005, probably the month of June, Mike Watkins and I were out covering Tropical Storm Arlene. And at this point, I was able to do the live video from the Tahoe to a larger audience. I had signed up with a company out of Seattle called PlayStream that would handle what's called the content delivery network side of things, or CDN. They would be the distributor. I would pay them a small fee And I was on the lower tier plan at the time. And back, by the way, back then we paid for the actual gigabytes in, you know, throughput, the amount of actual data used. It wasn't viewer hours or anything like that. It was truly the amount of bandwidth. And there was a certain plan, 10, 15, 20 gigabytes. I don't remember what it was. It could have been as small as 5 gigabytes. And it was a certain flat rate per month, maybe $24.95 per month for a certain amount of bandwidth. And then there was an overage from there. And so during this tropical storm, Mike and I decided we'll do a limited test. We will embed a Windows Media Player on the homepage that would pull from PlayStream. And PlayStream's serving system, their content delivery network, would pull from the laptop in the Tahoe. It was very complicated, but that's how it worked. You got to tell PlayStream the source. And the source was a certain URL that was basically the IP address and a port number of my laptop pulling from Windows Media Encoder that was bringing in the video camera from my dashboard. See what I mean? It's all complicated, but it worked. And there we were doing our lean, streaming live from Gulf Shores, Alabama. It was a very limited test. We were only going to do it for a few hours. I didn't want hundreds and hundreds of people watching, and then I get this giant $300 or $400 invoice from PlayStream. We didn't know. We didn't know how this was even going to work. Were people going to embrace it? Was it going to be popular? Whatever. You know. So this was just a beta test. And as it turns out, Paul happened to be tuning in to HurricaneTrack.com that particular day as he was on his way in to church services from Pahrump going into Las Vegas.
And I saw the test going on. I thought, oh, this is cool. So, you know, I went right to the media player, and I was watching your stream. I remember it was a Sunday morning. We're driving in, going into church into Vegas. And I'm showing my wife, and she's like, yeah, I'm really thrilled, you know.
Let's back up a second. So that's what's like even more remarkable is Paul found my stream by accident on the way into church in his van. I guess Trish was driving. Trish is his wife.
Correct.
And Paul was using mobile internet himself.
I was uploading static images from my dash cam since about 2000. I remember there was somebody in Florida doing that at one point. I thought that was pretty cool.
So I get this idea that I want to do live video, not just from the Tahoe, but I want to create, you know, what eventually becomes these remote camera systems. And I knew that Paul was basically all things tech. You know, he knew a lot about a lot of stuff related to electronics, you know, internet speeds, wiring, energy needs, you name it. And so I asked him, probably over email one day, hey, look, I want to power quite a few things potentially remotely, you know, using an inverter off of like a car battery. And I said to him, is a car battery going to work?
You're going to need a bigger battery.
Yeah, you're going to need a battery, period. I was like, well, what kind of battery? What are we talking about here? You know, like, yeah. You know, can you just go get like a car battery, like a 12-volt battery?
And I said, yeah, that would work, but I don't recommend it because if it spills, you're going to have a case full of acid rolling around in there.
Right, or it might blow up even.
Yeah, through the hydrogen gas. So we recommended a sealed lead acid battery or AGM.
And it was really interesting because that came about from your knowledge of how you back up a lot of your equipment out there. As it turned out, Paul and a couple of his business partners had a company there in Pahrump called Air Internet. And it did exactly what you think it would do. They provided high-speed wireless internet to the Pahrump Valley. And so in terms of how things worked out for Paul and me, he was very knowledgeable about having battery backup systems and so forth, and in fact, this was a subject that was right up his alley. And how cell phone companies that have banks and banks of these AGM batteries, and they switch on and they power this stuff. They're called deep cycle.
Right.
And that was the key. And I never would have known that if it wasn't for Paul. And walked into Batteries Plus in Wilmington. I was like, all right, I need an AGM battery. And it's funny because I walked right back out because the guy was like, well, how many amp hours? It's like,
you should have said all of them.
Right. A lot, I guess. What are you trying to power? I was like, I don't know, I'm not even going to go there. Let me talk to my guy. I'll get back with you. And that's a true story. I went into Batteries Plus thinking I was ready to go, and I was still uninformed, uneducated. So I talked with Paul, and he explained about how different items draw different amounts of power. And your laptop is going to be a certain amount of watts, and that's going to draw down a battery over a certain amount of time. And are you going to leave the lid open on the laptop, or can you close it? And you guys remember freaking Windows, if you close the darn lid, you had to tell Windows, don't turn the effing laptop off when I close the lid.
I remember that.
This becomes maddening. It's like so many hurdles that you have to get over for this to work. And Paul was very enthusiastic and very encouraging. And if something didn't sound like it would work, he would tell me and he'd explain why. And I understood, and it helped me to grow and to figure out all the pieces that I needed to put into a box to redo what we were doing, to basically duplicate the Tahoe in a box the size eventually would turned out to be the size of a Foot Locker, because you had to have a 75-pound AGM battery and, you know, big VCR in there and all this other stuff, wires everywhere. But it looked like it was going to work. And Paul was the reason. I mean, he really was. I had the idea. I mean, it probably would have taken me too long to figure it out on my own had I not known Paul. It's just one of those weird things that the universe just drops somebody into your lap. I often refer to my life as the Truman Show, that it sometimes feels that way. And I think we all feel like that from time to time, that there has to be some director that some, all right, let's write in Paul Bowman to the show. That's going to be on episode 3397. You know, Paul's going to get introduced to the show. That's what it felt like. Cause why would a guy from Nevada? I mean, it's not like, you know, I don't know. It was really bizarre, but boy, it worked out. And as we're going to hear from Paul in future episodes, we really did a lot together before I ever even met the man in person. And that's important to note. I had never met this guy in person, had I?
Nope.
Up to this point.
Nope, not at all.
Yeah, it was all over emails and phone calls. We would spend hours on the phone with the headset, pacing around the house. I think I wore grooves in the concrete slab of my old house in Leland, just talking until the wee hours of the morning about ideas after ideas after ideas. And with him being 3 hours behind in Nevada, it was easy to do because he was 3 hours behind.
It was fun. We came up with a lot of cool ideas. Solved the world's problems a few times.
Yeah, right. It's just unfortunately, the world never found out about those solutions.
Nobody was willing to pay for the idea. So
that's right. That's right.
That's right. Yeah.
But this one worked. This camera idea went on to eventually work. I would invest several thousand dollars of money into it and develop three prototype remote camera boxes and figure out eventually, all right, I got all this now. How am I going to get it out to the world? As the early summer of 2005 went on, I continued to work with Paul and Jesse and Mike Watkins and my good friend Jason up in Cary, North Carolina. All of us working together to try to solve this one problem now. We've got the technology. Now how do we get it out to the rest of the world? And in a way that won't bankrupt me, because you got to remember that back in 2005, the concept of doing live streaming video for the masses was very expensive, and it could be a very expensive endeavor. It was still innovative and new enough that I didn't really know how I was going to pay for it. I couldn't approach Lowe's or Sprint because I really couldn't give them a budget. I didn't know. I didn't know if it would be extremely popular, if it would go viral, as we now know the expression, or if it would just be of limited value and interest to people. This was a first, and when you're the first to do something, there is a little bit of apprehension on exactly what to do with it, how best to roll it out. I also didn't want it to fail. you know, and have people like make fun of me or whatever. I mean, it's that whole concept that who wants to fail? Nobody does. And it was just great to have Paul there along the way to, you know, play this role of that outside voice, somebody that knew a few extra things that I didn't know, that really helped to get me over some hurdles that eventually led to the development of three of these prototype live unmanned camera boxes. And as we got into the summer, Paul and I would get together again on the phone and eventually discuss the plan. How are we going to get this out to everybody? What's it going to be? Is it going to be through hurricanetrack.com? Do we come up with some new site? You know, we knew that my friend Jeff was going to be doing Hurricane Now. You know, there was a lot going on and time was running out because, as we know, the 2005 season was off to a very fast start and it was going to set records.
Oh man, this is fun. It's making my brain hurt. It's so good. I'm trying to pull those memories back, you know, in the proper order.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we're talking 15 years ago and all the stuff that's transpired since. Well, it really was groundbreaking what we were trying to do. And I think that you being on the other side of it there, you know, 2,200 miles away or whatever it is, was remarkable. And that's the hard part to kind of translate to people. It's not like Paul and I grew up together. I mean, we found each other totally by accident over the internet. And as y'all are going to hear, he became a big part of helping out during that 2005 season in some remarkable ways. Well, it has been a lot of fun talking with Paul Bowman in this episode, and I wanted to make sure that I introduced him to you all because he is going to be back. We're going to talk about a lot more of these adventures and these stories as we traveled down the Hurricane Highway back in 2005 together. He was a big part of it, helping to solve problems, to bounce ideas off of. We've talked about that. A really remarkable person, and again, I cannot emphasize enough the fact that he was in Pahrump, Nevada, of all places. You know, how many people have ever even heard of Pahrump, Nevada? On the other side of the Spring Mountains there from Las Vegas comes my good friend Paul Bowman. Much appreciate him joining us for this episode. I look forward to conversing with him in the future. Well, considering the fact that I am putting this episode together on December 30th, allow me to be the first to wish you and yours a happy new year, a happy 2021. A lot of us are going to be pretty glad to get rid of 2020, put it behind us. But I will say that having you all, the support that you have provided, your words of encouragement, the funding that you have provided to help make all of this possible, that is something that I will remember as a huge positive for the year 2020. We grew this community bigger than I ever would have thought. And it's through that one thing, the weather, that has really connected us. And I'll take that away as being a very strong positive from the year 2020. All right, well, that'll about wrap it up for this edition of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. When we reconvene next time, the first Wednesday in 2021, we will dive deep into a look back at Tropical Storm Arlene. Join me again next week as we continue our journey down the Hurricane Highway. I am Mark Suddeth for Hurricane Track. I'll talk to you then.